range from the 40s in southern Wisconsin to the mid-60s across central Missouri. Lows overnight will range from the low 30s north to near 40 degrees south. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and isolated thunderstorms. The high, 52. The wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 34 and a wind out of the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 55 and a west wind at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 37 and a northwest wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. The wind will be out of the east after midnight. Sunday, cloudy with a chance of showers and a high in the low 60s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a low in the low 50s. Monday, showers and thunderstorms are likely, and there's a possibility we could see some severe weather come Monday. The high in the upper 60s. Monday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Cooler with a low around 40. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 30s to the low 50s. Rockford reported light rain in 38. O'Hare, light rain 41. In Bloomington, cloudy skies, 46 degrees. At Mattoon, partly sunny and 50. Belleville, partly sunny and 52. At South Bend, 47 degrees. Lafayette, 49. Terre Haute reported light rain, 47 degrees. Indianapolis, 48 degrees. South Bend, Lafayette, and Indianapolis all reported cloudy conditions. Willard Airport at the top of the hour reported a cloudy sky, the temperature 50. The dew point, 31, the relative humidity 48%, the wind out of the southwest at 17 with gusts to 23, and the barometric pressure 29.67. And at 12:39, 49 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is cloudy.
WILL is your source for full-service news and information. And this year, we're celebrating 40 years of NPR's award-winning news and 30 years of our talk show Focus. Our spring pledge drive begins Saturday, April 9th, and we're encouraging listeners to call in their pledge of financial support or give online now at willpledge.org.
Urbana voters are about to decide on the local park district's third tax referendum in 4 years. One failed, the second one passed, but each dealt largely with upkeep of current facilities and maintaining staff levels. Tuesday's tax question has just one purpose: reviving the tradition of an outdoor pool with a new state-of-the-art facility. Those behind the bond issue say this may be their last chance. Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert reports.
8 small kids and their parents are in the kiddie pool at the Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center, where an adult exercise class is in the full-size pool. Staff members say the crowd is typical for a Wednesday night until the summer when things get a lot busier. 14-year-old Daniel Stelzer comes there a few times each year, but he says the indoor pool is a little limited for his purposes.
One thing that was great about the Crystal Lake pool is how there was an area that was just water to play in. You know, there was the area at the end that was like 3 feet deep for people who were, you know, learning to swim. They could go into the deeper and deeper water. Really, there's not a pool anywhere around that just has an area of open water without lap lanes, without slides, that you could just swim or play in.
Daniel has been part of the Crystal Lake Nadiators swim team since he was 6, a team without a place to compete since deterioration forced Crystal Lake Pool to close in 2008. The outdoor facility had something to offer his whole family in the summer, says his mom, Becky Mead.
They go for a swim team, and we go every single day, probably in the afternoon, too. It's a whole different animal because it's, I mean, this is a lovely pool and it's a great asset to the park district, but it's not an outdoor pool in the summertime. And Sholem Pool is more of a water park than a pool.
The family's closest outdoor swimming options are in Champaign, including the Sholem Aquatic Center, Spalding Pool, and the privately run Indian Acres Swim Club. Urbana Park District Executive Director Vicki Mays says the new vision for Crystal Lake Pool includes 4 separate pools at the old site, one for competition, a deep plunge pool, and 2 leisure pools. Mays says one of the main driving forces for this plan is the tight programming schedule for the Indoor Aquatic Center, Urbana's only remaining pool.
The Indoor Aquatic Center simply even in the summer when it's not used by the school, is simply not large enough to meet the demands of the community overall.
If the referendum passes Tuesday, Urbana property owners next year will pay an additional 11 cents per $100 of assessed valuation, or about $37 more on a $100,000 home. That tax hike would remain in place to pay off bonds over a 25-year period. The rate would drop off over time due to tax caps, but enough tax money would remain in place for pool upkeep beyond that time. Park District Board President Michael Walker says he understands a property tax increase at this time will be a real burden to some people. He's also optimistic that the economy will bounce back.
This community will be doing better 5 years from now than it is today, and we will be well off to have gotten this process started and have it in the ground rather than wait 5 years and then try to do it in a climate where maybe building is booming again, interest rates are coming up. It just becomes much more difficult.
Local developer Howard Wakeland says he has no problem with the intent of the Park District, but is concerned about the pool's more than $7 million price tag and how citizens would continue paying for it. He says Urbana is growing to the south and east, and putting a pool at the site of a shuttered one on the city's north side doesn't serve Urbana well. Wakeland contends there's less interest in swimming these days, and a new Crystal Lake pool would only serve about a fourth of the population.
They're on their four-wheelers out in the wilds. They're on baseball, and they're on this and that and the other thing. There's so many things for young people now that I don't think that swimming has the popularity that it once had.
For Daniel Stelzer and his mom, it's hard to imagine not having a regular outdoor site for both recreational and competitive swimming. But a failed referendum will mean exactly that, according to the Urbana Park District's Michael Walker.
This is basically a decision point. It's a fork in the road for this district. Are we going to have an outdoor pool or not? And if it fails, as far as I'm concerned, that decision is made for the foreseeable future.
If the referendum fails, the Park District will still require the use of taxpayer money for pool-related expenses. They'll have to spend $300,000 in existing tax funds to fill in the old Crystal Lake pool. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media.
Why do dinosaurs ignite our imaginations, and why do we still have so many misconceptions about them? Gabriel Spitzer of Chicago's WBEZ takes up those questions in this edition of the station's series, Clever Apes.
They're powerful, charismatic, and often our first dose of science, dinosaurs. But the dinos we loved as kids may not much resemble the real deal, and maybe it's exactly our cultural connection with them that makes it so hard to let go of those dinosaur myths. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this is Clever Apes. So dinosaurs are one of those scientific fields that people have real emotional connections to, and it seems like we also get attached to our myths about them. So we're going to pull that apart a little bit now, and maybe if we're lucky, shatter a few cherished childhood beliefs. Here to help me with this is Paul Serino. He's the renowned paleontologist here at the University of Chicago. We're in, what do you call this space exactly?
This is my fossil lab.
We're in his fossil lab. So maybe we'll start with what has to be the most mythologized dinosaur of them all, the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Of course, you know, I remember T-Rex of my childhood and still in the books that I buy for my two-year-old, walking on two legs, sort of flailing those skeletal little forearms and terrorizing the entire universe. How does that stack up with what we know today?
That information was still colored by one thing that I think is the bugbear of all science, our own anatomy and the things closest to us. We walk on two legs. We found a dinosaur that walked on two. So how should we mount it? We ended up mounting it something like us, or perhaps a kangaroo. But of course, it bears a much greater resemblance in many parts of anatomy to a bird. And you have to strip the feathers off a bird to realize that its backbone is, in fact, horizontal. Now we generally have that part of the formula right. But there are still other things that are not demystified yet about their anatomy.
Like what, for example?
Well, the thing that always makes me grind my teeth is what we do with the wrists and the hands. And Tyrannosaurus rex inevitably will have little begging paws. What a dog would do if it was begging for a biscuit. The hand should be sidewise and sort of capable of folding, just like a chicken wing. But this one's a real difficult one to demystify.
How persistent are these myths?
If you really want to understand, you really need to get down to those local villages, people who've never seen a dinosaur. Nomads in the middle of the Sahara. What do they think of these bones that I'm digging up in front of their face? They think the big dinosaurs that we're digging up in the middle of the Sahara are large camels. And that makes ultimate sense because those are the only large animals that they really are exposed to in their life. And that's exactly what we did in the 1600s when we found the first known published dinosaur bone in England. We thought it was a giant thigh bone of a human.
Do you think that one of the reasons that these myths die so hard has to do with our connection to these animals as children?
I think they cause a child to imagine. And it's actually remarkable how this child imagines. Even at 2 and 3, they can look at a skeleton, they realize there's bones, sort of like it's something that is inside an animal, and it sort of gives you an idea of what it's not alive, but it once was alive. And I believe that if there's anything that is at the core of being human, it's the power of imagination. And I think it's an invitation to a lost world, to a world of imagination.
Which is also a world of myth. And in that case, maybe the mythologizing is not necessarily a bad thing. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You know, one thing I'll say that would be perhaps surprising is that I think imagination is at the heart of science. We say, no way, isn't science opposed to that? Isn't it myth-busting? Yes, it's actually a combination. But you can't bust a myth and show it to be true or false unless you have the myth in the first place. The creative thought behind those ideas, imagining a continent drifting so that you could go out and test it, those things sometimes come just in handfuls in the lifetime of a scientist, and they're your greatest moments.
Finally, I hope you can settle something for me. What is the best dinosaur?
Well, the best dinosaur, that's unscientific.
No. You know the answer. You have to tell us.
Well, I would say my favorite dinosaur is the one I can't play among my children. I cannot play favorites except to say that it's the one I am working on right now. And I am working on one of the strangest dinosaurs. It dug and burrowed for a living, and yet it was a carnivore. We've never seen an animal like this. And for me, that's the best dinosaur in the world right now.
Well, Paul Serino is a paleontologist here at the University of Chicago. He's a National Geographic Explorer in Residence. Thank you so much for being on Clever Apes.
Thank you for having me.
Gabriel Spritzer of WBEZ Chicago. You'll find more in the station series Clever Apes at wbez.org/cleverapes.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar and bulk foods department, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for April the 1st, Friday, 2011.